Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of A New Kind of Celebrity. This episode is called Bookmarks and has a different format. We believe that learning and inspiration gets consolidated when we make connections, discuss insights and experiences. So after every 5 episodes, I'd love to have a conversation with a dear friend and discuss the notes that we bookmarked from the different episodes. We'll discuss patterns, aha moments, and things we found interesting. If you haven't heard any episode till now, this is a great place to start and get a quick overview of the insights of the past episodes. Welcome back, Kanika. Very excited to again chat with you about the past 5 episodes, hear a bit of what stood out to you, and have interesting discussions as always. So would love if you can maybe just kick us off with what stood out to you with the last 5 episodes.
Thank you, Vinil. Lots of things stood out, definitely. One that I was, again, very excited with the diversity of guests that you hosted this time. Also, I'm very excited about diversity of language usually, and it was very nice to see some people talk in Hindi because that was their most comfortable language. That was great. One of your guests, which is episode 20, Jabna Chauhan, really took my heart away. There is a line that stood out to me where she says, "Samaj mein kuch achha karke marenge, usme maza hi kuch aur hai." So Jabna, for our listeners, at her time was the youngest sarpanch elected in the country. She was elected at 21. And just her energy, her excitement, her pride in her work and in her life's journey was so beautiful to hear. When I hear such young women talk with such enthusiasm and such confidence, it just blows me away.
Yeah, totally agree. I feel like her confidence and her worldview was just so very inspiring, right? At such a young age, with the kind of exposure that she spoke about. And what I found beautiful is at the end, when she was talking about just New India and, you know, Swachh Bharat Abhiyan. And I was wondering when she started talking about that, you know, I was like, okay, I thought it's a traditional, typical praising sort of initiatives in the new initiatives in the country. But then when she went just into like hamara dil aur dimag ka safai abhiyan karna hai, and only then can we move into New India, I just found that very, very inspiring.
Yeah. In Jabna's conversation, what also stood out was how clearly she articulates the importance of her support system, right? She talks in detail about her father standing up for her when the village was against her, when people around her were against her. And it just made me think about how important support systems in our lives are, right? That support can come from family, for friends, it can be from your colleagues, but you can't do it alone. And then in the same breath, I thought about another episode, which is Sutapa Sanyal in episode 22, where she categorically says that to young women and girls, she would like to tell them that you should build a tribe, right? I think that's the word that she uses, build your tribe. Yeah, that really struck a chord for me.
Yeah, I think on that point, I feel it also reflected in few other conversations. It was really interesting to see how that the support system also made such deep influences, right? So you mentioned in episode 20, Jabna Chauhan talking about her father, but also the person who told her, like, you should stand for election, right? It sounded like it would not have occurred to her had someone not said that to her. Similarly, in episode 22, Sutapa Sanyal, she also spoke about those nuns in school, you know, like encouraging her that, no, you can do better. Even if you're doing well, you can do better. And a similar trend, even in episode 23 with Robert Cabrera, he spoke very explicitly about his father when he got 99 out of 100 and his father was sort of like scoffing at him because he didn't get that one point. And Robert is like, but the second person is at 60 on 100. And his father was like, no, but you can do better. It's not about the others. So I think just that trend of both, like you said, the support system, as well as like these small things that make such a deep impact, maybe not consciously in that moment, but when you're later trying to connect the dots, you realize that something very tiny has actually influenced you.
Yeah. Robert's episode, I mean, honestly, was very hard hitting. I think anyone who listens to his story is going to have to find some time to sit back and think about it. But an idea that stayed with me is, he said the only place to assert my humanity was a classroom, right? He grew up in a war-torn country, spent many, many years in a refugee camp, and then got the opportunity to be in a classroom, and then later went on to the US to study more. And that idea that the classroom was the only place where he could assert his humanity, I think there's a lot for us to think about when he says that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was very hard-hitting. And also, I think for me, another thing, as I was listening to him, like you mentioned and gave some context, war torn, like it was Rwanda genocide, right? As a young child going through that, then being a refugee, you know, facing all of these different odds, people process things so differently. And it was quite incredible to actually see how he's processed so many things, right? You're looking at saying, okay, I'm going to make sure I'm at the best at this subject, or I'm going to make sure that I'm better than everyone else here. And I think, you know, I'd love to figure out what leads to that. Is it just chance, or are there certain factors, or maybe the support system, like we spoke about earlier, that enables you to channel some of this positively, because then it's something that can be replicated for so many others as well. So that's just a question in my mind, right? What really enabled him to process all of this? And maybe not in the moment, but even later, right? There are people who aren't able to get over some of these really, really deep scarring incidents. So that's the question in my mind.
Yeah, yeah. He said many quotable quotes in that 50 odd minute conversation, right? Another thing that really stood out was, you know, he said that in real life, people survive when people come together as a group. In the context of a refugee camp, it meant something, but you can actually apply those things to life in general. And I was just thinking that his very difficult life circumstances have like give him a certain like wisdom about life.
Yeah.
And so when he talks about his work, he talks about his work in a very different manner. Like you wouldn't expect most people to be able to see their work and locate it in a larger context of humanity and, you know, a larger context of how it's shaping and impacting people. One of his lines where he said that he recognizes that his gift is uncertainty, and that find your gift and share it and something. I mean, I was a little overwhelmed, honestly, because if I had to find my own gift, that seems like a very tall order.
Yeah.
But yeah, Robert's clarity and just his confidence, and there's no anger in his voice, was very, very beautiful to listen to.
Yeah. And I think for me, it really pushed me to look at things very differently. I think somewhere in my mind, at least, you know, and I mentioned that a little bit in the episode as well, that when I think of like a dangerous situation, I think of fight and flight, right? And whatever we've read about biology, it's like, okay, everything shuts down. Blood is not flowing to your like brain. It's flowing more to your limbs so that you can, you know, respond in the moment. And that was my association with difficult situations, right? And to hear him talk about in a difficult situation, you can only come out of it if you put other people before you, was a very different way to look at things. That no, you don't have to get, you know, the horse blinkers or the blinders and just focus on that problem. There are other ways to deal with the problem. And it was interesting how he spoke about the philosophy, according to him, that worked was where people who put others before themselves survived, in his case, the genocide. But I found that quite challenging, actually, in how I thought of things.
Yeah. In contrast to the energy of Robert's episode was Jabna in episode 20, where I thought of her as, you know, a jugadu. Like whatever life is going to throw at me, I'm going to make sure that I'll make the best of it, right? She went on to like do some journalism. Then someone said, you should contest an election. And she went on to contest an election. Then she starts an NGO. She's the epitome of jugaad for me. You know, just figure your way out in life and just do it with a lot of fun and passion, and things will open up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And similarly, Lopa in episode 21 for me, in a slightly different manner, but she talks about how she just took the plunge. She didn't worry about whether she had an education degree, whether she understood social work. She said, I wanted to learn this. I wanted to explore. And I just took the plunge. And not many of us are able to do that, right? In the times we live in, we're all looking to do that perfect degree, that nuance, you know, master's program that we're going to all enroll in and get the best skills. I think just like Lopa's faith in, I'll figure this out, I'll just do it, was very refreshing to hear.
Yeah, I found it very, I mean, she's very funny also. And I loved how she said, you know, she started with saying, see, setting up an NGO is not a rational act. You know, I just love that because how true it is, but it was hilarious. And I think another thing that really stood out to me was her why of rural and why she wanted to sort of work there. And she spoke about this later also of being cognizant of whose need you're serving. And I thought it was a really great perspective that if 60-70% of our country's children live in rural areas, and I spend my entire career working in education and I've never even worked there, I will feel very like uncomfortable. I found that also very interesting. You know, to have that clarity of where do you really want to contribute, and it's not contributing anywhere, but you want to really understand the problem as a whole. So I found that interesting. Going back to what you were talking about, Jabna, though, I found a common thread of just that determination, motivation with even your Robert and Jabna. For example, when she spoke about that growing up, because she was two sisters and they had one brother who had some disability, how they would keep hearing from the village, ki, what is going to happen to your parents? You know, kuch nahi hone wala hai. And that determination to say, I'm going to do something. I'm going to make sure I do something. And being the first girl from her village to go to college, walking 18 kilometers daily, like some of that was just mind-blowing. So while, you know, it's interesting that you brought up the, you know, jugaad and go where it takes you, there was also that very clear determination that I have to do something. What that is can evolve. I found that very, very inspiring as well.
Similarly with Sutapa Tanyal, where she was one of the very few women in a male-dominated police force in UP. And she just knew that she had to make it work, right? I think she mentioned that even today, the percentage of women in the police force is maybe what?
7%.
That is huge. I mean, that is a huge, huge gap that we can fill. But another interesting thing I thought about Sutapa's conversation was she talks about one having a unique contract with the universe. And she says that you can have a mentor, but you can't ape the life of your mentor. You can take bits and pieces and you can be inspired, but you got to make your own. That was such an important, I think, lesson for me personally, that, yeah, you have a unique contract with the universe.
Absolutely. Yeah, I loved that as well. And especially when she said, you know, the universe is not going to support you on a subcontract you make. It's just such a deep thought in such, you know, transactional terms. So that was beautiful. What I found also really interesting, which also you and I have had many conversations around this, when Sutapa spoke about entering the police force and people telling her that, you know, why do you want to do this? It's so male dominated. Are you sure you want to do it? And she's like, at that point, I didn't have an idea of what is gender discrimination because I'd never faced it in my life growing up, etc. And I know you and I, you know, we were recently only having long conversations about how we've grown up and whether we've experienced firsthand any sort of like gender discrimination influences your worldview of whether gender discrimination exists or not, right? And it was so interesting to hear her say something very similar, that she didn't think it was going to be a challenge because she had never faced something like that before. And then definitely, I think not just the gender piece, but also she spoke about through her schooling, never being like in the physical activities or the sports side of it. And then to complete like a police training academy and build that almost resilience of saying, I can't give up. I just have to move forward is also very interesting. On a disconnected note, though, I'm thinking about episode 19 with Dr. Kiran Modi. And it was a very interesting episode for me because I've not engaged with a lot of this space before. So while I understand, okay, children in care institution, orphanages, I didn't really think too much about it. And I think the thing that stood out to me the most, among many things which we can chat about, but was aftercare. I feel like I hadn't even given that a thought. It had never occurred to me that, okay, after a child, you know, is 18, they've grown up in an orphanage, what happens was something I never even thought about. That, as I was listening to her, I was like, wow, how come I'd never even given that a thought of all this while people are taking care of all of their needs? And suddenly you've made a transition and you're sort of fending for yourself in the world. So yeah, that was something that I just left really wanting to engage more with.
Yeah, I think Kiran Modi's episode was interesting because definitely is a realm that's not in the public eye, right? Children in institutions, we hear about it when something horrible happens in an institution in this country.
Correct.
That's the only time we're talking about children in institutions. And what happens to them after is just up in the air, right? And I think it's also a question, right? How do we decide that at 18, someone is an adult and is big enough and old enough to go out into the world and fend for themselves? Who came up with that number 18? So, yeah, I mean, it could have been 21. It could have been 25. Another thought that really struck me was her story she narrated of this boy, Michael, whose parents they were able to trace after many, many years. I think the child was in an institution from about 4 years of age till about 16, maybe, and then they were able to trace the parents. And it just reinstated, you know, my belief and just my stance maybe that all the work in with children cannot be scaled up, right? Like when people are designing interventions or thinking about organizations, children need individual care. Like you cannot scale up these interventions. And so it's important to just keep that as a reminder.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And she spoke about like the family-like setup that they wanted to create with the orphanages or the homes they were running, right? And placing it in a community so that you have those interactions. It's like growing up just in a very large family, maybe of 12 people. And she did speak about, like, of course, they've scaled over multiple years, but they have 17 different centers, right? Which is also scale, but it's not the scale that we talk about, at least when we talk in India of reaching scale. So definitely resonate with that. I think also very hard-hitting things, probably because of the nature of the work as well. But I think the statement that she shared when Udayan Care evolved their program to add in a few more, you know, support to girls in schools who are living with their families. And she mentioned that this lady told her, you know, I wish I was dead. Because if I was dead, then Udayan Care would have taken care of my children. And I found that just very overwhelming, just on the state of affairs in general, that anyone has to feel that way for very what you and I and many might consider very, very basic things like education and, you know, opportunities.
And I think it's high time that as a country, we start thinking about these things. The pandemic was a reminder enough that our systems to support children and especially children who lose parents is honestly very abysmal. It's in a bad state. So yeah, there's lots that we can do.
You know, on the, I mean, it's sort of related, but there was something that really I've not been able to get over after my conversation with Sutapa Sanyal. And this is a similar pattern even to a much older episode with Shailaja Chandra. So both people who IAS, IPS working in the system. And we had a little bit of a dialogue. We were talking about the context of how different biases, politics influence like police officers, right? And she made a very valid point of saying, hey, they're coming from the same social construct. And this, so of course those biases are going to exist, right? And she had a perspective that the way to overcome that has to be like the individual's own value system. Like they need to operate with integrity. They need to make those choices. Only then can sort of like the institution also deliver on the service it's supposed to provide. And I think I felt very differently. And obviously maybe it's coming from an experience that I've had as well, where I feel like organizations can play a role in shaping or nudging, even if it's not shaping, but nudging behaviors, nudging expectations, values. And there's a definite role to be played to do that consciously. And there are people, like if you remember back for episode 2, Vandita Murarka, this is some of the work that she does, right? And gender stereotypes, having those workshops, talking about it. So today there are also resources available to do it. And I found it very interesting that both the people who are within the system, within these institutions, both of them, even after I've asked once or twice, saw it as in each individual has to live up to these values. It's not in the hand of the institution. And that was something that has really like stayed with me as a almost like a sore point.
Yeah, yeah. I think, I mean, honestly, I don't want to shy away from saying that this is the easy way out, right? To say that individuals will change and therefore one day institutions will change. You got to put the stick in the ground and say that the institution will make an effort to make sure that everyone who comes in has to start abiding by certain values. I'm definitely not saying that this is easy. We're talking about the police force of the country. But for starters, I mean, you have 7% women in the police force. Maybe let's start from there.
Yeah.
You know, Vinil, this point reminds me of a conversation I once had with a senior police officer in the country in a very different context, where she was also one of the few women in the higher ranks. And she said that to be a woman in a police force, I got to be a man. And she said that she tells her woman constables and her SHOs and whoever joins in that if you want to ace it here, you got to be a man. So if you got to use foul language, use it. If you got to use power, use it. So I don't know. I think it's hard. It's hard. And I hear them when they say that individuals will change and one day institutions will change, because it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming to say that, you know, we're going to change an institution.
Yeah. And I guess the individuals also have, I mean, they've had such a strong moral compass, right? In both Sutapa Sanyal, even if I think back to Shailaja Chandra, they both took certain decisions because of which they got transferred or didn't get work for some time. And I understand why it's a matter of pride also, right? Because you're going against the tide, right? Nobody else is doing that. But why should they have to pay that price, right? And the system should enable everyone to sort of do that. And it's also interesting, the individualistic nature stands out even more with the example you brought up, because in the episode, Sutapa Sanyal actually spoke about fairly generic things that helped her equalize things. Like she mentioned, you know, making sure you're doing a great job. You really need to know your work. You have to be fair and objective. And very interestingly, leave came up as something that was the third in importance in this. So it was also very interesting to understand that in the context of the police force that it got elevated so much. But yeah, it stands out that it's almost like each individual is responsible for themselves. And given that they are all in public service roles, there's just a higher responsibility that each one of them have. And it's a lot of burden for them to have to do that just by themselves. You know, always do the right thing, no matter what people are doing around you. It's just very, very tough.
I mean, it's the classic idea, right, that big institutions benefit from telling people that individuals need to change, individuals need to take responsibility, because nobody wants to question the system.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Or, I mean, which he also asked, what is the institution? It's people. What is it's the people. System? It's people, right? So at the end of the day, we all know. And you and I also have been, at least for a limited time, in this work of just working with people. We also know how challenging it is to change our own mindsets, forget about changing other people's mindsets. So I think the point is well taken that at the end of the day, it is individuals that need to change. And I guess we need to figure out how do we facilitate that for ourselves and others at a faster pace, especially for those in positions of responsibility.
Yeah. On a slightly different note, Vinil, Jamna's conversation also left me wanting more. She speaks a lot about sharab bandi. She talks a lot about how, quote unquote, humne hamare gaon mein sharab bandi karwai. I would have loved to hear her talk a little bit more about the nuances of what happens when you ban alcohol. Banning alcohol is a popular thing in our country, right? People are winning elections by using it. So she had shed more light on what actually happens, what are the consequences, what does it do to local people, how does it impact politics, what's the economy of it, from a village's point of view. That would have been very interesting to hear.
Yeah, fair point. I'll tell you a really funny story though. So my husband was like listening to the episode and he had visited, you know, Himachal and Spiti Valley many years ago for different like professional work, and he was in one of the villages there, and as soon as he heard her, he was like, oh my god, that's the reason why those women were protesting against the liquor joint in that place. At that point when they were there, suddenly this group of women sort of started attacking this liquor joint, and they were like, you know, what is going on? And at that point, obviously had no idea suddenly why this is happening. And it was such an aha moment to sort of hear her and make that connection. Like, I was there when, you know, what you're talking about happened. And it was also interesting because sometimes, you know, when you hear these stories, it's unclear on how much of it is, you know, a little bit magnified, how much of it has really happened. So while it doesn't answer your question at all, I thought it was a really funny story.
Oh my God, it's a small world. How cool is that? No, I love young women who create a ruckus. I love them.
Of course. So Kanika, I'd love to move into our closing segment, which is what have been our biggest aha moments from these episodes. So would love if you can get started with what has been one of your big aha moments.
So one of my big aha moments was episode 20, Jabna, where she was quoting someone else, where she says, aap garibi mein paida hue hain, ye aapki galti nahi hai. Magar aap garibi mein mar jayein, to maine kuch theek nahi kiya.
Very powerful. I think another one for me was episode 19, Kiran Modi, where she spoke about sounds and smells that remind you of home and how everyone needs to have that experience. And I feel like that line just captured why she does what she does in such a powerful and visual way that it really stayed with me.
Robert in episode 23, where he says, my gift is uncertainty. And I thought of, oh, what is my gift?
Yeah, and to extend that, he also spoke about if you sort of live your life giving your gift, then you're in that zone where, you know, your high performance zone that they talk about in sports was very interesting. I think another one for me from episode 21 with Lopa Gandhi was that she spoke about perfect solutions don't exist. If they did, you wouldn't have to do this work. And I think while it was very simple and it's something, you know, that you sort of intellectually know at some point, still in the work that we do, we'll keep trying to figure out, okay, no, what's the best solution? What's the best solution? And just accepting that maybe there is no perfect solution, just keep going.
Yeah. So Tapa in episode 22, where she says, be more you. You have a UB contract. Very, very beautiful and powerful.
Yeah. And I think she extends when she says uni contract with the universe. And then she goes on to saying, the universe is within yourself. So take out that time to sort of spend time with yourself, because in a way, it's then a contract that you've made with yourself. So it was really beautiful. I think one more from Jabna Chauhan's episode was, she was talking about how there are always some people who keep saying something or the other, right? They have an opinion on everything. And she said, agar sunna hi hai, to achha kaam karke sun lo. That you're going to, somebody or the other is going to have some tipni on your work, right? So you might as well do something good or do what you want to do. You're going to hear anyway. I found that attitude just very cool.
I have one more from Robert in episode 23, where he says, the final product is bigger than the sum of its parts. I think when you listen to the episode, one will understand more why he says this, but it stayed.
Yeah. So on that note, Kanika, thank you so much. I think conversations, as always, are really interesting. And it's very fascinating how we pick very similar things to discuss as well, very organically, without even discussing with each other. So I always enjoy having these debates and discussions with you.
Yes, I hope that we can do this in person sometime. But until then,
yes, see you next time. Thank you.
See you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Do let us know what you thought about this format. We plan to do a bookmarks episode after every 5 interviews. We'd love to include your questions, reactions, and thoughts into these bookmarks episode. So do share them with us on any social media platform or via email. And as always, do subscribe and follow our podcast pages on social media or on your podcast listening platforms. Meet you soon. Till then, take care.